ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति 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 नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं जैव ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। Om. We continue our study of Anugita. And in fact, we're coming towards the end of the Anugita portion of the Mahabharata. And this, we have a small section. I think we'll see the whole section today. And this is, the topic is Sankhya. Sankhya, you might remember from our study of the Moksha Dharma Parva. At towards the end of that huge Moksha Dharma Parva, we saw many of these teachings of Sankhya. You might remember that Sankhya, like Vedanta, is one of a group of six traditional schools of thought. These six schools of thought that we call Darshana. So they're called Shad Darshana, six traditional schools of thought. Those six include Nyaya and Vaisheshika, which are very philosophical. They include Sankhya and Yoga, and they include Vedanta and Purva Mimamsa. Purva Mimamsa is a study of the ritualistic portion of the Veda, and Uttara Mimamsa is a study of the Upanishad, the latter part of the Vedas, also called Vedanta. The reason Sankhya is being taught here, in spite of the fact that the teachings of the Mahabharata are almost entirely based on the spiritual portion of the Mahabharata. Most of the Mahabharata, of course, is story. But of the sections we are studying, of the spiritual teachings that we find in the Mahabharata, it's almost entirely Vedanta, Vedantic in nature, except for a few sections on Sankhya. And the reason for those sections in Sankhya, the ones we saw before and the one we're going to see today, the reason is that in ancient times, the dividing line between these six schools of thought wasn't so rigid as it is today. So the six traditional schools of thought were much more intermingled in ancient times. Today they're considered separate subject matters. But one thing that's true is that Vedanta has some overlap with all of the other five schools of thought. So we'll see today some overlap between the teachings of Vedanta and a school of thought known as Sankhya. You might remember that Sankhya literally means counting or enumeration, and it has to do with the basic structure of the system of Sankhya, which is to enumerate 24 basic principles. And we're going to see those 24 basic principles today. Just to see them in summary before we plunge in, the two most fundamental principles are Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha meaning consciousness, Prakriti meaning nature. And at first thought, Purusha and Prakriti sounds a little bit like Brahman and Maya, and you can find some similarities between Brahman and Maya with Purusha and Prakriti until you look at it a little bit more carefully and you understand that Purusha in Sankhya is consciousness indeed, but they consider there are an infinite number of consciousnesses, not just one. So we have one Prajnanam Brahma, the Mahavakya that describes Brahman in terms of consciousness, is describing one universal consciousness. For Sankhya, every living being is endowed with an individual consciousness called Purusha. And then Prakriti, what they call, what we can translate as nature, in Vedanta, we distinguish between Brahman and Maya by saying Maya is not as real as Brahman. That's what allows us to study Advaita Vedanta, the non-dualistic Vedanta. So if Maya is not as real as Brahman, like the pot is not as real as clay, then the presence of Maya doesn't detract from the non-duality of Brahman. But in Sankhya, Purusha and Prakriti are equally real. They are two individual realities. So clearly, Sankhya is not a teaching of non-duality. Not only is there a difference between Purusha and Prakriti, but Purushas are infinite in number. So it is there are some similarities, but in total, there's a huge difference between the teachings of Sankhya and Vedanta. Historically, though, Vedanta has drawn upon certain teachings of Sankhya, in particular, those teachings which deal with the evolution of the universe. Western philosophers call this cosmology, how the cosmos came into existence. And Sankhya has a nice doctrine or teaching of cosmology, the evolution of the cosmos, and Vedanta often borrows it. It's very nice. Vedanta borrows those portions which are consistent with the teachings of Vedanta. So, just to finish our introduction, we said that Sankhya teaches a system of 24 principles. The two topmost principles are Purusha and Prakriti. From Prakriti evolves a next layer of creation called Mahat, and I'm going to explain these as we go along. So from Prakriti evolves Mahat, from Mahat evolves Ahankara, which is not our Vedantic Ahankara. We'll see those in just a few minutes. From Prakriti, Mahat, from Mahat, Ahankara, from Ahankara come the five subtle elements, Mahabhutas. From the five subtle elements, Mahabhutas, come five Jnanendriyas, organs of knowledge, come five Karmendriyas, organs of knowledge. We'll see all these in a few minutes. And finally comes five recombined subtle elements, which become Stula Bhutas, physical elements. So you add them up and you come up to 24. There are two different ways of counting 24. I'll comment on that when we come to it in the text. We pick up the thread with the Brahmaji teaching the rishis who had come to him for instruction. Here we have a story within a story within a story, as usual. So Brahmaji is teaching the rishis, like Vasishta, and that story is being narrated by a Brahmana to his student. That story is being narrated by another Brahmana. And that story is being narrated by Sri Krishna to Arjuna. So we have at least four layers going on right here. So we continue with the with Brahmaji addressing the rishis. Brahmovacha, Brahmovacha, avyakta purvamutpanno, avyakta purvamutpanno, mahanatma mahamatihi, mahanatma mahamatihi, adirgunanam sarvesham, adirgunanam sarvesham, pratama sarga uchyate, pratama sarga uchyate. Here the word avyakta. Avyakta means unmanifest. Avyakta is frequently used as a synonym for Prakriti. In the teachings of Sankhya, the universe is in a state of equilibrium, in that state of equilibrium, the only thing that exists is Purusha and Prakriti. And then that equilibrium gets disturbed by karma. A very elaborate teaching. I'll spare you the details. Anyway, the equilibrium of sattva, rajas, and tamas, which are the components of Prakriti, get disturbed. When it gets disturbed, the first thing to evolve from Prakriti is called Mahat. So here, Prakriti is called avyakta, unmanifest. Before the universe exists, the universe is avyakta, unmanifest. It's a synonym here for Prakriti. Avyaktat, from that avyakta, from the three gunas in equilibrium, from Prakriti. Purvam utpannaha, the first, excuse me, the first thing to evolve, to arise, is Mahan Atma, is Atma. Atma here means entity, existence. The entity called Mahat. When you decline Mahat, masculine nominative singular, it becomes Mahan. So we usually quote it as Mahat. So the first thing to evolve from Prakriti is Mahat. Mahat here called Mahamatihi, the great intelligence. And that intelligent Mahat, the first evolute of Prakriti, is Adihi Sarvesham Gunanam. It is Adi. Adi means beginning. Here it means source. So that Mahat is the Adi, the source, Sarvesham Gunanam, of all the gunas of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Remember that in ancient times, the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, were the fundamental reality of nature, just as we look at nature today as matter and energy. In ancient times, they looked at nature as sattva, rajas, and tamas. And that Mahat is Pratamaha Sargaha. It is the first creation, the first aspect of creation, Uchyate. It is said to be the first aspect of creation, the first stage of creation. If you've ever seen a scientific explanation of the Big Bang is said to have gone through several stages in its evolution, from the initial explosion, as it were, to a stage called cosmic inflation. I'm not going to give you a physics lecture. And then cosmic inflation continues, and there's still no particles. They're only just energy. And after the energy cools off, then particles start to exist, which would be another stage. And then further, the particles combine. So you can imagine the Big Bang going through several stages, many stages, as it evolved, as it expanded, as it cooled to form the universe in which we live. That's a metaphor that describes the evolution in stages of the universe from Prakriti. So from Prakriti comes avyakta, and I'm sorry, from Prakriti or avyakta, which is a synonym, comes Mahat. What comes from Mahat is ahankara, which we see next. Yautpanno mahan purvam, yautpanno mahan purvam, ahankara sauchyate, ahankara sauchyate. Aham hityeva sambhuto, aham hityeva sambhuto, dvitiya sarga huchyate, dvitiya sarga huchyate. Dvitiyaha sargaha, the second aspect of creation, uchyate, is called what? Ahankara. Back up at the top. Yaha, that which utpannaha arose, mahan purvam, from Mahat, that which came from Mahat, that which evolved from Mahat, ahankaraha saha uchyate. Saha, that is uchyate, said to be ahankara. Here ahankara isn't our Vedantic. Is not used in the Vedantic sense of the feeling of individuality, the particular vritti in your mind that makes you feel like an individual, nor is it used in the more common parlance of pride. It has neither of those meanings. Here, ahankara, it gives the sense of individuation. The very next line gives you that sense. Aham iti, I, iti, thus, eva, indeed, sambhutaha. The sense of I was born. So this ahankara is the source of the sense of I. That's literally what it means. Kara, that which makes or creates. Aham, the sense of I-ness. But here, we're not talking about the sense of I-ness that belongs to an individual person like you or me. We're talking about a sense of I-ness at a cosmic level. A sense of I-ness at a cosmic level, the best word I can use for that is individuation, the principle of being an individual thing. So far, we've come from prakriti, which is the fundamental reality for nature, from prakriti or avyakta, universe and unmanifest condition. The first evolute, as we saw before, is mahat. In mahat, we could say the three gunas become manifest. And then in prakriti, we'll say the three gunas are in a state of equilibrium. Then in avyakta, we'll say the three gunas are in equilibrium. In mahat, the three gunas are no longer in equilibrium. And then ahankara, in that stage, remember, these are stages of creation, dvitiyaha sargaha, the second stage of creation. In that second stage of creation, we begin to get the principle of individuation, meaning the three gunas are ready to give rise to distinct realities in the world. And what are those distinct realities in the world? The first things to evolve from ahankara are the five subtle elements called mahabhutas. You may also be familiar with them being called tanmatra. Tanmatra is also used. It means exactly the same thing. The five subtle elements. We see that next. Ahankarat prasutani, ahankarat prasutani, mahabhutani panchavai, mahabhutani panchavai, prithivi vayurakasham, prithivi vayurakasham, apo jyotishcha panchamam. Apo jyotishcha panchamam. Ahankarat, from ahankara, follow the sequence, from prakriti to mahat, from mahat to ahankara, and now from ahankara to the five mahabhutas. Ahankarat, from ahankara, that principle of cosmic individuation. Prasutani, were born. Mahabhutani, subtle elements. How many of them? Panchavai, the five subtle elements. What are those subtle elements? Prithivi, the element of earth. Vayuhu, element of air. Akasham, element of space. Apaha, element of water. Jyotihicha, an element of fire. Panchamam, as a fifth in the list. Notice it's not in the traditional order. Traditionally, we'll go from most subtle to least subtle or backwards, but here it's just given in an arbitrary order. The order is actually dictated by the meter of the verse, so that's why they come in this order. Before we continue, just to make a point here, when we're identifying these five fundamental subtle elements, it starts to sound quasi-scientific, and it's not. We want to differentiate between these Vedantic teachings or Sankhya's teachings and science, which have completely different, utterly different orientations. Science is a study of the world around us, which is very valuable because we learn how to control the world around us and make our lives more comfortable. Vedanta and Sankhya is not, the purpose is not to control the world around us at all. The purpose is to lead us on a process of spiritual growth. So we'll see, as we continue, we'll see many references to elements and parts of nature. But this is not, the purpose is not in a scientific sense. The purpose in delineating all these aspects of the world in which we live is is not to scientifically analyze and study so that we can control and manipulate nature, but rather the ultimate goal is to help us differentiate aspects of the world in which we live and to differentiate our true natures as consciousness, consciousness being not only separate from the world, but consciousness being independent and unaffected by the world. These are very important Vedantic teachings, as we've discussed before. True inner freedom comes when you know that nothing in the world can harm your true nature, as Satchidananda Atma, as consciousness. In order to make that teaching very clear and real and grounded in our experience, we have to deal with all aspects of our experience. We experience the world around us every day. If we fail to understand our day-to-day experience, how can we ever hope to gain a knowledge of our true nature being independent of all that we experience? If we don't understand what we experience, then how can that figure into our spiritual growth? So we have to deal with all of our experiences. You might remember a discussion long ago about all of Vedanta being based on Shruti, Yukti, and Anubhava. All of Vedanta is based on Shruti, scripture, Yukti, reasoning, and Anubhava, reasoning. So we cannot possibly, Anubhava experience, sorry. We cannot possibly ignore Anubhava experience. So everything now that follows from these five subtle elements evolve our five organs of knowledge, sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch, evolves our five organs of action, evolves our mind. All of that is part of our experience. And the five gross elements of earth, water, fire, etc., that we experience with our senses, all of that is part of our world of experience. All of that is going to be described in the coming verses, not as part of a scientific explanation, but to help us recognize the fact that consciousness is independent of all these experiences. Consciousness is unaffected by all these experiences. So let us continue with this analysis of the world of experience. So from the whole sequence, from Prakriti, Mahat, from Mahat, Ahankara, from Ahankara, the five Mahabhutas, and from the Mahabhutas come, he's going to say 11 elements. Gets a little tricky. Let's see what those, 11 organs. Let's see what those 11 are. Ekadasha chayan yahur. Ekadasha chayan yahur. Indriyani visheshataha. Indriyani visheshataha ahankara prasutani, ahankara prasutani, Tani vakshyam yaham dvajaha. Tani vakshyam yaham dvajaha. Ekadasha cha yani ahuhu. Yani indriyani. Those organs. Indriya here meaning organ. How many of them? Ekadasha. Eka plus dasha. 11. Ahuhu. There are said to be 11 organs. Visheshataha individually. So there are 11 organs individually enumerated. And these 11 organs, ahankara prasutani, they are prasutani, they are born, they evolve from the ahankara, the next in our next stage of our evolution. Tani, those 11 organs, vakshyami aham, I, vakshyami, I will describe them, I will teach them. Brahmaji is talking, and he addresses Dvajaha, O twice-born. He's addressing the sages. O sages, I will now describe those 11 organs. What are those 11? Shrotram tvakchash chakshushi jihva. Shrotram tvakchakshushi jihva. Nasika chaiva panchami. Nasika chaiva panchami. Padau payurupastam cha. Padau payurupastam cha. Hastau vagdashami bhaveta. Hastau vagdashami bhaveta. So, those 11 are in three groups. There are five jnanendriyas, five organs of knowledge, which we'll enumerate in just a moment, five karmendriyas, organs of action, and then one more, that one more being mind. We'll see this in these two verses. So first come the five jnanendriyas, organs of action, which include shrotram, organ of hearing, tvak, organ of touch, chakshushi, the two eyes, organ of sight, jihwa, tongue, organ of taste, and nasika, cha, and the nose, the organ of smell, as the panchami, the fifth in this enumeration. Here we have the five organs of action. Jnana, indriya, combines, becomes jnanendriya. Next we have five karma indriyas, called karmendriya, organs of action, which include padau, 2 feet, payuhu, organ of evacuation, upastam, organ of procreation, hastau, the two hands, and vak, organ of speech. Organ of speech being dashami bhavet, the tenth in this enumeration. So we have five plus five, we're missing the 11th, which we'll see in the next verse. Indriya grama hityesha, indriya grama hityesha, manahe kadasham bhavet, manahe kadasham bhavet, etam gramam jayet purvam, etam gramam jayet purvam, tato brahma prakashate, tato brahma prakashate. Indriya gramaha iti eshaha. Eshaha, this is indriya gramam, the group of 10 organs. And ekadasham bhavet, the 11th of this group, is the manas, mind. Mind is considered the 11th. If my memory serves me right, many texts on Sankhya don't count the mind separately as 11. So there are different ways of counting to 24. You could include Purusha in the enumeration of 24, I think is usually done. But I think here we get a slightly different enumeration where Purusha is not included in the 24 and mind is. Anyway, this is all details which are not particularly important. Anyway, different ways of enumeration. Excuse me, what I just said was incorrect. So if we have, let me just enumerate the 24, just for my own sake, just so I'm sure that I've got it right. We have 5 Gyanendriyas, 5 Karmendriyas, I'm sorry, back up, 5 Mahabhutas, subtle elements, 5 Gyanendriyas, 5 Karmendriyas, that's 15, and then set mind aside, then we have 5 Sthula Bhutas, which we'll come to in just a moment, 5 gross elements, that gives us 20. So 20, in addition to Prakriti, Mahat, and Ahankara, that's 23. And then Manas gives you 24. So that's how you add up to 24. But if my memory serves me right, there's another way of counting where it's Purusha that's number 24, and the mind is not individually enumerated. I could be, it's a matter of memory. I think that's what I remember correctly. But as I said, it doesn't really make a lot of difference because this enumeration is not for this. If we were scientists, it would be really important to enumerate all this stuff correctly. We're not scientists. What we really want to do is to negate all of this as being separate from Atma and not affecting consciousness at all. So the way in which we do the enumeration is not the focal point here, as it would be in science. So mind here, manas, is considered ekadasham, the 11th of this group of organs. Etam gramam, this group of 11 organs, jayet purvam, purvam, from the beginning, jayet, it should be conquered. Now, not conquered like science wants to conquer nature. Here, conquered in the sense of dismissed, negated, as being separate from Atma, as being that which can't affect Atma, that which is less real than Atma, like the pot being less real than clay, the pot can't affect the clay. If the pot breaks, nothing happens to the clay. So we negate the reality of all these 24 bits that we enumerate. We negate the reality of all that we enumerate. Negate the reality means we show it to be less real than Atma. And by showing that it's less real than Atma, we come to discover that Atma can't be affected by any of that consciousness. Your consciousness cannot be affected, hurt in any way by anything in nature. And in this way, tataha, from that process, what is a process? Conquering the group of 11, which means dismissing the reality of this group of 11. Tataha, from that practice, Brahma prakashate. Brahma here meaning that the reality. The reality which we can call Atma, the reality we can call Brahman, prakashate, will shine, it will appear, it will be discovered. So very clearly, the fact that it says that after enumerating these 11, then get rid of them. So clearly that's not a scientific orientation at all. So we've left out only the 5 physical elements, the sthula bhutas, which now come here at the end. Indriyan indriyartascha, indriyan indriyartascha, mahabhutani panchacha, mahabhutani panchacha, sarvanyetani sandhaya, sarvanyetani sandhaya, manasa sampradharayeta, manasa sampradharayeta. Indriyani, we have 5 senses, here referring to five gnanendriyas, sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. Along with those five sense organs come indriyani cha, come indriyartha, indriya, artha, object of sense, sense objects. There are five sense organs, and there are five sense objects. For the sense organ, let's go through that very briefly. So for the sense of shrotra, I'm back on verse 13. For the sense of hearing, the associated element that you hear is akasha, space. For the sense of tvak, touch, the element that you sense is vayu, air. For the sense organ chakshu, sight, the element that is perceived is fire, light. For the sense organ jihwa, taste, the element experienced is water, apa. And for the organ nasika, nose, smell organ, the element experienced is prithivi, the element of earth. So for each of our five jnanendriyas, organs of knowledge, there is a corresponding stula bhuta, physical element. So these are the elements in the world that we experience with our five sense organs. And this concludes the enumeration of everything experienced. So starting with Prakriti, we've gone through these various stages of evolution to include everything involved in experience. The first three stages, from Prakriti to Mahat to Ahankara, were like the preliminary stages, getting ready for the universe to explode forth. And then the universe explodes forth with five subtle elements, jnanendriyas, karmendriyas, mind, and then finally all the physical elements that are experienced. So in this way, Sankhya enumerates the realm of experience. And again, the reason for enumerating all of that is not for scientific study, but for as part of our spiritual practice, which is what we see here in the second half here. Sarvani etani, all of these, sarvani, all, etani, all of these, sandhaya, having restrained all of these. Having restrained all of what? References back to the top line. Having restrained indriyani, having restrained your five senses away from indriya artha, away from objects of sense, withdrawing the five sense organs from the five sense objects, which is a complicated way of just saying withdrawing your senses. So sarvani etani sandhaya, withdrawing your five senses from the world, withdrawing your attention from the world, manasa sampradharayate. You sampradharayate, one should concentrate, manasa, with one's mind. You should concentrate your mind, you should meditate, is basically what he is saying. Having withdrawn your attention from the outside world, you should concentrate your attention within, you should meditate. Here again, it points to the enumeration being for the sake of identifying what we want to withdraw from, what we want to dismiss, what we want to negate. So before you can negate something, you have to identify it. So these 24 are identified for the sake of ultimate negation. Then, Chine manasi sarvasmin, chine manasi sarvasmin, na janma sukamishyate, na janma sukamishyate, jnana sampanna sattva. sattvanam, jnana sampanna sattvanam, tatsukam virushamatam, tatsukam virushamatam. Kshine manasi sarvasmin. When sarva, sarvasmin manasi kshine, when everything in the mind is kshina. Kshina means, kshina, what would be a good English word for that? Resolved. Literally decreased. Decreased to a state of nothingness. Removed. When everything in the mind has been removed. When the mind has been completely resolved. Na janma sukham ishyate. Na ishyate. One no longer desires. Janma sukham. The sukha, the enjoyment of janma, literally birth, referring to this life. This is actually a teaching we've seen several times before, a very important teaching we've seen several times before. When, the first half of the verse, when your mind becomes totally silent, you no longer desire worldly happiness. That's a good paraphrase of the first half. When your mind becomes perfectly silent, you no longer desire worldly happiness. There's a very important teaching in that. And the fact is, the true source of sukha, happiness, is not out there in the world at all. The expression here used, janma sukha, the sukha that you gain as a result of your janma, as a result of being born. So I've translated that as worldly happiness. Na janma sukha mishyate, one no longer desires worldly happiness, because when your mind is totally silent, the only thing that remains is your true self. And that true self, Satchidananda Atma, is itself the source of ananda, fullness, completeness, contentment, peace, joy. This is something everyone knows intuitively, but maybe it hasn't been thought through very quickly. Two aspects. One is everyone says that the true source of happiness lies within. It's lip service. Everyone says those words without having that reality a living part of their lives. They say the true source of happiness lies within, and then they spend the rest of their lives looking for happiness everywhere else outside. Isn't it true? It's one of the ironies of life. Everyone says true source of happiness lies within, and then they look everywhere else for that happiness. The second thing that's also intuitively understood is this. When your mind becomes more quiet, you've heard me teach this usually in the context of meditation. Well, you've heard me teach this. When your mind becomes more quiet, to the degree your mind becomes silent, to that degree you feel like you are approaching that which is most valuable to you in your life, that which is most important, that which is truly the source of contentment and peace. And it's such an important message. As your mind becomes increasingly silent, you are increasingly losing your connection with the external world, cutting yourself off, withdrawing from the external world as your mind becomes increasingly silent. And then you find yourself moving closer and closer to that true source of contentment and peace, which is your true self, Satchidananda Atma. And that's what's really being described here. Shine manasi sarvasmin. When your mind becomes completely quiet, silent, resolved, na janma sukham ishyate, you no longer desire external happiness because you have discovered it. You have discovered the true source of happiness, contentment, peace, joy within yourself. And that's what he says in the second part. Jnana sampanna sattvanam tatsukam virusham matam. It says, for those who have figured this out, and the expression used here, jnana sampanna sattvanam. Here, sattva means person. Sattva can have so many meanings. Here, sattva means a person. A person, sattvanam, for those people who are sampanna, endowed with jnana, this knowledge of Sankhya, this knowledge of Vedanta, for those who are endowed with this knowledge, meaning for those who are enlightened. For those who are enlightened, vidusham, in fact, that's what it says. So, vidusham, the wise. For those who are wise, vidusham, for those who are endowed with this knowledge, tat sukham matam. Tat sukham. Tat, that which remains, and here we have to make the connection to the first half of the verse, tat, that. That refers to what remains when your mind becomes perfectly silent. First half, when your mind becomes perfectly silent. Second half, tat, that. That which remains when your mind becomes perfectly silent, tat sukham, that is real sukha. That is real joy, contentment, and peace. That is the ultimate source of joy, contentment, and peace. Matam, it is considered the true source of joy, contentment, and peace. Considered the true source for whom? Vidusham, for the wise. Jnana sampanna sattvanam, who are endowed with this wisdom. So, how interesting this chapter. After enumerating all 24 of these principles, then in this verse, we throw them all away. We make our minds perfectly silent, and when the mind is perfectly silent, none of those 24 principles are present in your experience. Remember, this is all a doctrine of experience, a doctrine that reconciles our experience with the ultimate freedom and fullness, which is your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. So after enumerating these 24 principles, we come to this verse, Kshine Manasi Sarvasman, when your mind is completely resolved, when all 24 of these principles have faded from your experience, tat sukham, what remains is the real contentment and peace that belongs to your true nature as unborn, unchanging, limitless consciousness. And that brings us to the last verse of this section. Sasarva dosha nirmuktas, sasarva dosha nirmuktas, tata pasyati tat param, tata pasyati tat param, yat param, mano manasi sandhaya, mano manasi sandhaya, pasyat yatmanam atmani. So the prior verse talked about the practice of meditation, turning your attention away from the world of experience, allowing your mind to become perfectly silent, and in that silence, you have an opportunity to discover the reality of who you are. that reality is always present. Even right now, in the middle of this class, the reality of who you are is present right now, but that reality is covered up, as it were, by all of our mental activities. There's so many experiences. We're experiencing the room around us. We're experiencing stuff going on in our bodies. We're experiencing all the stuff going on in our minds. All of this flurry of experience is happening right now, and that obscures the presence of Satchidananda Atma. When the mind becomes perfectly silent, Satchidananda Atma alone remains, and that becomes an opportunity for discovery. In that silent mind, you can bring the teachings of Vedanta to bear upon that silence. Silence itself is not the goal. If silence is the goal, if you just want to be silent and content, it's so much easier to go to bed and get a good night's sleep. In deep sleep, you have that silence, you have that contentment. That silence is not a goal. That silence is a means to the end. That silent mind, described in a prior verse, is not the goal. The silent mind is an opportunity to apply the teachings of Vedanta and discover your true nature as Shuddha Chaitanya, as pure consciousness. And that discovery is what's described here in the last verse. Saha, that person who has done this practice of meditation, actually, to put it in a big context, the person who has first enumerated the 24 principles of Sankhya, the person who has then dismissed the reality of these 24 principles of Sankhya by determining that they're not as real as Atma, the true self, then that person in deep meditation, turning their attention away from all experience, by turning their attention within, by allowing the mind to become perfectly silent, they have an opportunity, as I said, in that silence to discover their true nature as Shuddha Chaitanya, as pure consciousness. Saha, that person, Sarva Dosha Nirmuktaha, Nirmukta, being completely free from Sarva Dosha, from all defects. And here, the defect we're talking about is not a defect of the body, not a defect of the mind. It's a particular kind of defect that prevents you from recognizing your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. Satchidananda Atma, as I said a moment ago, is here now. Your true nature is present here now, but perhaps unrecognized. If your true nature is here now, but unrecognized, why is it unrecognized? There's a certain defect or obstacle that prevents the recognition of your true nature. That obstacle or defect is ignorance. So sarva dosha here, all defects, is referring to ignorance. Sarva dosha nirmuktaha, becoming completely freed from the defect of ignorance. Tataha, thereafter, pasyati, one discovers, yat param, that which is supreme, that which is real, that which is true. Becoming free from the defect of ignorance, you discover your true nature. This would be a good time to point out, this is a very important Vedantic teaching that I don't think we've discussed much. In deep sleep, the only thing present is Satchidananda Atma. So then why don't you wake up enlightened? In deep sleep, Satchidananda Atma alone is present, but you don't wake up enlightened. And the reason for that is, it's not true that only Satchitananda Atma exists in deep sleep. The other thing that exists in deep sleep is ignorance. Satchitananda Atma exists in deep sleep, but it is covered by ignorance, which is why you wake up from a good night's sleep feeling refreshed. You don't wake up enlightened. As opposed to the process of meditation described in a prior verse. So in a prior verse, we discussed the process of meditation through which your mind becomes perfectly silent, just like in deep sleep. But you're not asleep. You're in meditation. And being awake in a state of meditation, you have an opportunity to bring the teachings of Vedanta to bear upon your experience of silence. Now, if you're thinking, wait a minute, when I start thinking about the teachings of Vedanta, my mind is no longer silent. Correct. That's how it works. So you are first in a state of perfect silence, and then you emerge from that silence and reflect on the teachings of Vedanta. And the reflection specifically is, what is present in that silence? And then, having reflected on that, on the teachings of Vedanta, you ask yourself, what is present in that silence? The only thing present in that silence is pure consciousness, Satchitananda Atma. Then you can go back into that silence and confirm. So you are silent, and then you're reflecting on the teachings of Vedanta. Then you're silent, then you're reflecting on the teachings of Vedanta. Then you're silent. You go back and forth between these two states. You can't do that in deep sleep. In deep sleep, you're just asleep. But here, in this process of meditation, you bring the teachings of Vedanta to bear upon that experience of silence and meditation, and that's where knowledge takes place, ignorance is removed. So sarva dosha nirmuktaha. In this way, one becomes freed from all defects, especially from the defect of ignorance. And tataha, as a result of that, pashyati tatparam, you discover that truth of yourself, your true nature as Satchitananda. Manaha manasi sandhaya, another description of that process, sandhaya, having fixed. Having fixed what? Manaha, the mind. Having fixed the mind where? Manasi. Having established the mind in the mind, which means restraining the mind from any kind of extrovert activity, completely withdrawing the mind from the world, from the body, from any kind of activity whatsoever, withdrawing the mind completely, establishing the mind in the mind, then pashyati atmanam atmani. We find the same expression in Bhagavad Gita and many scriptures. Then pashyati, one discovers, atmanam, one's true self, atmani, in oneself. One discovers the true self within oneself. These two usages of the word atma are actually a little different. So your attention is focused in the mind. So this final word, atmani, in oneself, specifically means in your mind. So with that we can retranslate this. Pashyati, one discovers, atmanam, the true self, atmani, in one's mind. And that's an accurate translation, and it's an important principle, because where Atma is consciousness, where is consciousness present in terms of experience? In terms of experience, consciousness is not outside in the world. consciousness is not even inside your body, because remember, your sense organs convey information from your body and your senses. It all gets conveyed to your mind. We've discussed before, all experience takes place in your mind. The locus of experience is your mind. The locus of consciousness is your mind. The locus where the true nature of consciousness will be discovered, that locus is your mind. Which is why there's so much emphasis on meditation. Meditation to make your mind prepared for this discovery to take place. So that discovery is described in these last two verses, making your mind perfectly silent. You have an opportunity to discover in that silence that the consciousness that remains in that silence is your true nature. Your true nature as Satchidananda, your true nature as being full, complete, boundaryless, limitless, that discovery is made with a silent mind and with the help of self-inquiry guided by the teachings of Vedanta. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah. Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kashchid dukkhabhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Tat Sat.